Hello, good afternoon, and welcome to the Telegram. Yes, we're on air now, Ben. Welcome to the Telegram. We're having another hangout, another podcast that's being broadcast as a hangout live on the worldwide internet. And today, we're going to be discussing the Labour Party and its various woes. I'm joined by Benedict Brogan and also by Dan Hodges. And hopefully, we'll also be joined by Fraser Nelson, who's on the other line at The Spectator and who's just trying to reconnect his internet as we speak. So, obviously, Labour behind the Tories in a couple of opinion polls. Very difficult situation for them there. We'll talk about that in 1 second. Very quickly, though, I just want to announce, first of all, that you can send us questions at the hashtag HangWithTim, but also that I'm going to be on Question Time tonight. Yay! And I just wonder if anyone... I know.
You may not be, because you're still in London.
I'm in the
and
audience.
And it's in Coventry, and you don't know where Coventry is.
And I still don't know where Coventry is. Any quick tips? What should I or shouldn't I do, Dan?
Well, turn up.
Turn up,
unlike last time. That would be a positive.
Okay.
I'd leave now, actually, just to be on the safe side. Would you like me to step
Should
in?
I call you a taxi?
That's all right. How far is Coventry?
Taxi to Stanley.
You're a taxi, right, Tim.
Actually, it's a lovely place. It just occurred to me, having said all of that, as I'm going to be with an audience of Coventry people, it's a lovely place. It's a very nice place.
And, wherever it is.
Wherever it might be. God bless the people of Coventry. Dan Hodges, two opinion polls have put the Tories slightly ahead of Labour. What's gone wrong for Ed Miliband?
Well, in one sense, nothing's gone wrong. I mean, all we're seeing is sort of political gravity reasserting itself. I mean, the fact that the Tories now ahead has shocked many people with given that it's come with all the unpredictability of night following day. I mean, I think there are three things. Firstly, obviously on the economy. Labour has been attempting to reframe the economic debate, and that reframing of the economic debate has resulted in the Labour Party being 20 points behind in economic competence. The second thing is on the leadership. Ed Miliband has now achieved the impossible feat that he actually now trails Nick Clegg in terms of his own personal ratings. But I think that the main reason why Labour is behind in the polls is it's not actually been trying to be ahead in the polls. It's not actually been trying to win the election in the classic sense. It's been pursuing what's called the 35% strategy, has hoped that it could hold on to the Labour base, bolt on a percentage of people who defected from the Lib Dems after the 2010 election, and then via the vagaries of the electoral system, somehow eke out a parliamentary majority on that basis. And obviously the strategy is not working, but then again, it was never going to work.
Ben, you've said that you've asked the question, is Ed Miliband too arrogant? Is he too smug about this? Is he just simply drifting in to defeat? Is that what's going on, that he's convinced himself? You know, he's talked about his intellectual superiority, or his intellectual self-comfort. He's not saying he's cleverer than David Cameron, but he's more comfortable with his intellect.
Well, I'll come to that in a minute, but I think first we shouldn't let Dan Hodges pander the Tory line
in the way that he's doing.
I think we should stand up and say that actually, this morning, Labour is ahead in the polls, not the Tories. In fact, if you look at the poll out this morning, Labour is on 35 points and the Tories are on 32 points. So Labour is actually hitting the 35% strategy. And the interesting thing, of course, is that the Tories are still way off the share of the vote notional that they need to achieve in order to get back into power. So we should record the fact that the polls are still somewhere in a grey area, but the trend is certainly going against Labour. And what is certainly troubling for Ed Miliband is that his personal ratings on just about every measure you can imagine are pretty much on the floor and show no signs of improving. And so for Ed Miliband, what I find constantly striking is that he continues to operate as if everything is going swimmingly. And I think he does demonstrate some of the characteristics we see of previous leaders who've gone on to glorious defeats, in that he seems to be, if you watched him at PMQs yesterday, he happily got stuck into David Cameron, admittedly with no effect, but he didn't have that look of, say, Ian Duncan Smith at his nadir, who was visibly and operated as if he was on a losing streak. Ed Miliband operates as if everything is going terribly well, and I think people are quite surprised by that, and I know many of his colleagues are.
Dan, can you answer that point about the polls? Because the Sunday Times also put Labour ahead by about 7 points. I mean, were those two that had Labour ahead by two just simply Tories ahead by two?
No, I mean, I think the point that Ben makes is a good one. Obviously, the polls go up and the polls go down, but the trend for the last 2.5 years is very, very clear. And if you look at the average, I think the latest average Labour's got a lead of about 2 points. Now, for a party of opposition 12 months out from government, that is just a losing position. It's virtually impossible for any opposition party to win from there, even given the innate advantages that the boundaries and the electoral system provide for Labour.
Okay. Well, someone who might disagree with you is Fraser Nelson. Fraser, can you hear us? Can you confirm that you can hear us?
Loud and clear.
Oh, excellent, good.
He's here. You can hear us. It's better than Eurovision, isn't it?
Okay. This is great. This is little like Eurovision.
Wonderful technology.
Giving her news. Fraser, you bet £1,000 on Ed Miliband winning. Do you regret that?
I would have had I ever been so foolish as to bet in this election. I wouldn't. It was too close to call. I was cunningly asked by a charming reporter at The Guardian that if I was forced to bet £1,000, would I bet it on Cameron? And I think then, as I think now, that there's not much in it, but Miliband is slightly more likely to become Prime Minister of the next election than David Cameron. I mean, not because he's a genius, not because I disagree with anything that Dan said, although I must admit I do rather admire the boldness and the clarity of his mix of political theory and wrong, but it's certainly a change from the business as usual of the last 20 years. But if you look at the electoral implications, we have yet to see an opinion poll that would not put Ed Miliband in number 10, even because the unfairness of the Westminster system means that Labour would still get more MPs and be the party that forms a government. So I think when we're talking about the next election, it's a separate discussion to who is doing better, whether it's Cameron or whether it's Ed Miliband, because Miliband has got a massive advantage, and this 35% strategy that Dan talks about is actually enough to get him back. I would regard it as a calamity, but it's a calamity that I'm not confident enough won't befall us.
Can you explain to us, for those of us who are laymen and don't entirely understand this, why it is that 35% is enough, Fraser? Because I keep on saying to people, it's enough, and it just occurs to me, I'm not quite sure exactly why, mathematically, that's enough to get them elected.
Well, because the Westminster constituency system, it's in theory, all constituencies are supposed to be the same size. In practice, they're not. You can get some with 55,000 voters, others with 80,000 voters. Tory voters tend to be corralled into the pretty condensed constituencies. When people move up in the world, they move into leafier parts of the country. So you get Oxford, where it's absolutely crammed full of Tory voters. And then you get the rather thinner populated urban inner cities, where so if you look, it takes far more voters to turn a Tory to power than it does to return a Labour person to power. Now, David Cameron wanted to remedy this by cutting the number of MPs by 10%. He didn't really care about the number of MPs. What he did care about was a boundary review that would redraw all of these boundaries in a way that was fairer and in a way that would have given them an extra 10-15 seats at the next election. That didn't happen because the Lib Dems vetoed it. So we're going to fight the next election on these out-of-date and unfair boundaries that give Ed Miliband a massive advantage. And let's not forget, Lib Dems going into coalition with the Conservatives has halved the Lib Dem vote, and it's reunited the left. The left has not been united in Britain since 1983 when the Social Democrats started.
Thank you. Ben?
Well, I think Fraser is absolutely right in terms of where we stand now, and the numbers all point to Labour being the largest party at the next election. But I think what we should be looking at is trends, and we should be looking at tendencies. And the fact is, there's another year to go, and in that year, with the economy heading in the direction it's going, with Labour tanking in the way it is internally, with David Cameron's standing improving on every measure, even if you throw into that the fact that the Tories seem to have set aside their instinct at self-destruction and infighting, and for the moment are appearing surprisingly united, I think you can see a scenario that brings all those forces together to turn the polls around. And my betting would have to be on the other end from Fraser's. I think if I had a notional £1,000 and was a betting man, I'd bet it on David Cameron leading the largest party after the next election.
Dan, do you even have £1,000 to bet with?
No, because I've already scattered my £1,000 around various bets.
You know, we're working for the Telegraph. Exactly. Spectator, don't you, when people are betting £1,000?
Absolutely. I gave away my £1,000 on this about 2 years ago. I mean, I think the interesting thing, though, is if you step back, if we had been having this conversation in 2010, we would say the political trajectory of the Parliament would be the following. Government comes in, a little bit of early optimism, makes the cuts, becomes very unpopular midterm, economy starts to recover, Tory fortunes recover, and the Tories ultimately win. Now, give or take the odd little bump in the road, that is precisely what we're seeing at the moment. I mean, Fraser's absolutely right. If we're going to have an election tomorrow, Ed Miliband might just make it over the line. But the problem with the 35% strategy is if you pursue a 35% strategy, you don't end up with 35% of the vote, you end up with 30% of the vote. And at the moment, yes, Labour and the Tories are basically at level pegging. But remember, that is with UKIP at the moment polling around 12, 13, 14%. Right. The vast majority, we can argue about the numbers, a significant proportion of those votes are going to return to the Conservatives before the election, which will obviously boost the Tory vote. Similarly, the Lib Dems are on 8 or 9%. I don't know anybody who seriously thinks Nick Clegg is going to poll that low in 12 months' time. And as the Lib Dem vote recovers, as it will, those votes will come off Labour. So, yes, the Tories do have to have a built-in lead, but I find it impossible to see how they won't have that lead.
Something that's very interesting is that Fraser Nelson, Ed Miliband has brought on David Axelrod in order to save his campaign, which rather implies that he is the British Obama. Now, do you see Axelrod being able to bring anything to Miliband that isn't already there? Can you see him being a game changer for him?
No, not at all. It's kind of, as Peter O'Born writes in the Telegraph today, it's kind of hilarious to see these sort of people fly in and charge vast amounts of money to divest themselves of some platitudes and fly away. I mean, British politicians have got this reverence of American politics and tend to think they're being touched by some Obama-style stardust. Where Axelrod might be able to help is helping Miliband develop his kind of class war thesis. This is a thesis which got Bill de Blasio elected as mayor of New York, which got François Hollande elected as president of France. It's the sort of two nations, rich and the poor thing. And this is an argument which is in the ascendant right now. And we see it with Elizabeth Warren in the States, and you can see it pretty much everywhere. He will be helping Ed Miliband brew this left-wing populism, if you like, that I think he's rather successfully manufacturing here. Now, Miliband will be hoping that there'll be a growing appetite for this. I've said in my Telegraph column a couple of weeks ago that in this way Miliband wants to become the UKIP of the left. He wants to be a left-wing populist in the same way that Farage is a right-wing one. Now, ultimately, will it be successful? Dan has his doubts. I am less sanguine. But I can see what Axelrod would bring in that regard.
Ben, are you sceptical about the influence of Axelrod? We do have a photo here that we can share with people, because Ed Miliband has actually tweeted out a photo of himself with David Axelrod at a meeting of the Shadow Cabinet. I know people at home can see that. You probably can't, but it's worth taking a look for on Twitter. Ed's actually put that out there. Isn't there a slight element when you get British politicians importing the American like that of it being a case of saying, we don't know what we're doing? You guys are professionals. You presumably do know what you're doing. And this just looks like Ed's some kind of fanboy for the man.
Well, the thing is, of course, you hear a lot of Labour advisers complaining about Axelrod, and that's just the sort of typical complaint about foreigners taking their jobs, which you would expect from the reactionary end of the spectrum. But I think from Labour's point of view, it is hard to think quite how an American guy who isn't particularly invested in British politics and may need a full briefing about who Ed Miliband is, let alone the nuances of Labour versus Tories and UKIP for that matter, is going to be able to bring to the party. And the fact is that Ed Miliband is no Barack Obama. Of course, Ed Miliband and Labour know that, and in a funny way, they sort of hope that Axelrod is going to help them in other ways. And part of it is picking up on Fraser's really important point about this politics of the class war. They hope that Axelrod is going to help them sharpen that message a bit, which is partly we used to talk about the politics of envy. It's a bit of that, but it's more sophisticated than that. It seeks to tap into a more general post-financial crisis worry about the fact that there are still, the rich people have done very well out of it and poor people haven't. And the fact is, I think for Labour, however, this is an element of clutching at straws. They're spending a lot of money on Mr. Axelrod, and I'm not entirely convinced that he's going to be able to sharpen the message to be a game changer.
Dan, Obama was a rejection of Clintonism. Miliband is a rejection of Blairism, is he not?
Yeah, and that's part of his problem. I mean, he's pitching his message essentially to his base and the Labour Party rather than addressing the electorate. I mean, the thing you've got to also remember about Obama and Axelrod is they never actually won a campaign against an incumbent. And obviously that's what Ed Miliband is trying to do. I mean, the one thing that does interest me, though, just pick up on what Fraser said. It is very interesting. I mean, Fraser said about, you know, Ed Miliband's class strategy that he's successfully deploying. His strategy is not successful. I don't know of any political strategists who would say for a party of opposition 12 months out, a point of parity with the government at that time represents a successful political strategy, particularly given Labour's argument that the benefits of the economic recovery are not yet being felt in people's pockets. I think there is actually some truth in that. But even despite that, we still have a situation where the parties are at parity. Now, in 12 months' time, when the economy has become established, when we do have had the time for wages to finally start to exceed inflation, then the Labour Party is looking at a very, very bad political scenario indeed.
Okay, Fraser Nelson, final question to you. What does the rise of UKIP mean for Labour? If in next week's elections UKIP comes first, how does Ed Miliband deal with that? Or does he just ignore it?
Well, I mean, it's likely that UKIP will come first, but I think, and of course, you know, a lot of those votes will be taken from former Labour strongholds, but ultimately is caused the most harm by UKIP. I think it harms the Tories a lot more than Labour. So while Miliband will not like the fact that so many of his voters have been defected, he can be comforted knowing that David Cameron will be hurt in British politics right now is what happens to UKIP between next week and the election. I mean, they came second in 2009, but went down to 3% in the 2010 general election. If they climb, it's good news for David Cameron. If they don't go down below 10 points, then Ed Miliband could be Prime Minister. I mean, in a funny kind of way, Farage will be the unwitting kingmaker of the next general election.
Dan Hodges, you've said there's if Ed Miliband comes third, then he's finished.
Yeah, I think if Labour were to come third, I mean, I don't think they will come third, by the way. I think what I hadn't thought, but what I recognised yesterday after the PMQ session that Ben was talking about, if Labour were to come third, then I think there is at that point a serious prospect that we could see a move against Miliband. If Labour comes second, which is the more likely scenario, I think he will stagger on to defeat. And if Labour does top the poll, then that will give him a degree of respite. But I think in any of those scenarios, even if Labour were to dump Ed Miliband now, I think it's too late in the day. I think that the result of the next election is pretty much known now. I'm not buying into this, oh, it's too close to call sort of stuff. I think it's pretty easy to call now.
OK, and Ben, finally, what's your prediction for next week?
Next week, I suspect that UKIP will do very well. I wouldn't be totally surprised if they didn't end up first, even though the polls are going their way. I just don't buy many of the prognostications. And in a funny way, I think the European elections are sort of a little bump in the road. Tires go over them, but you don't notice it very much. And then we can get down to the serious business of the general election.
And 2015, you still think?
I think David Cameron will be Prime Minister after 2015.
Right. Okay. Finally, thank you very much, Ben and Fraser. You've both bet £1,000 either way. I know Fraser says he hasn't, but you know, let's roll with it and pretend he has. Dan, you and I, let's bet £10 on how UKIP's going to do in 2015. You think very badly, don't you?
I've got the mega bet. I've already pledged to strip naked down Whitehall if UKIP exceeds 6% of the vote. So I will bet you. Right. I will bet you 10%. UKIP will get 5%.
They'll get 5%. So what am I betting? I'm saying that I'll get more than that.
You're betting me they'll get
£10 on that.
Right? No. The naked down.
No, I'm not doing
Whitehall,
the naked
surely.
Thing.
That's already there. I'm already.
Yeah, that's already on the table. I'm not betting that. £10. UKIP will do better than that in 2015.
Very good.
Thank you very much, Fraser Nelson. Thank you, Benedict Brogan. Thank you, Dan Hodges. And thank you all for joining us on this Google Plus Hangout Telegram. And I hope to see you again next week. Have a great week.